Hi everyone, this is Andrew from gmanreviews.com and the Unnamed Movie Podcast. Tonight I have with me Kevin Carr from Film School Rejects and Fat Guys at the Movies. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. And I also have the guy who I'm happy to call my official San Francisco correspondent, Marco Cerritos. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back.
I'm happy to have you back. I'm so sorry about how that last episode went with you. But we have worked out all the kinks here.
I like kinks. I'm into that sort of thing. Now, so.
If you had heard the audio kinks from the last episode, you wouldn't be saying that. It was like you couldn't hear a thing.
Oh, audio kinks. I was thinking something totally different. That's my bad.
No. We'll get into the X-rated stuff later. But these audio kinks, you couldn't hear anything last time.
Wow.
So today I kind of had a hope to talk a little bit about film criticism and how it is today and how it's changed over years. I mean, We all know back when, before we were all born, you could only find a review written by some guy with this long mustache and who wears a bowler hat printed in the newspaper. But today it's all about everyone who can just click on WordPress and maybe pay, what, $30 a year to get a website like I do. And all they have to do is write a couple coherent sentences and boom, you technically have a review. But
coherent sentences at that.
I wanted to start out by asking, how long have you guys been critics? I want to start out with you, Kevin, and what is it how is it that you got into doing film criticisms, like, somewhat professionally, or I can call you professional. I'm somewhat.
I never make the mistake of calling myself a professional, but I allow other people to do that all the time. I actually got started doing it in terms of doing it on a regular basis in a published forum of any sort was back in about 2002. I really just found somebody who'd put my stuff online. I wasn't even running my own website for that at that time, and found somebody who was running a website. I got on that, and I got on a critics list to actually go see the early screenings. And just started doing it, and it's more of at least at that time, there was a high rate of attrition. You know, people would put their own reviews up, but it's tough to do film reviews on a consistent basis. So people would drop off, you know, in August when things get bad in the movie theaters. But I just stuck with it, and then I started putting them on my own website, which one of them was 7mpictures.com, which is still around, and that's really kind of my one site that I completely run myself. And then I just started finding other places. I found some papers around the country, smaller papers that would publish me. I ended up getting in touch with somebody who does radio, and they put me on the radio. And it was just sort of, you know, always asking the question, can I do this? Would you like this? And over the last couple of years, it's sort of snowballed into picking up radio stations, doing regular calls into stations every Friday morning or Tuesday mornings for DVDs. And recently I started doing television spots in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I'm from. And it just kind of snowballs from there, which it all starts with the internet. And I think the internet has really changed it in a big way. It's really given, you know, like you said, anybody a chance, anybody who can put up a website, which is really easy to put up any website and just a very, very canned blog and then go from there. Anybody can do it, which I think is actually a great thing because it opens it up to people outside of the guys with mustaches and bowler hats.
Marco, how long have you been doing this job and how did you actually get started?
Oh man. It is going to be 12 years in October.
Well,
yeah.
Did you have a mustache and a bowler hat when you started?
You know, I wish I could be pompous enough to say yes, and you know, I had the whole Anton Ego thing. But no, I was a college student when I started out, so you know, facial hair was like hit and miss. Bowler hats were not fashionable for the college kids. But yeah, that's what, you know, I started out fall of '97, and I basically started out by accident. I was waiting for a buddy to get out of a class, and we're supposed to grab lunch. And wandering around campus, just bored, I ran into the student newspaper office. And turns out, you know, they're having their weekly meeting outside, and just curiously went up to one of the guys and said, hey, what's going on? Oh, we're taking in new writers. Do you write? I used to do some stuff in high school, but it was really just, you know, bullshit reviews and nothing very serious. They were looking for film critics, and at the time I figured it was one of those deals where I pay for something that's out, they reimburse me, and that's the end of it. But it turned out they were, you know, it's just like Kevin said, they had a screening deal set up with movie studios. They get invited to premieres, they send the reviews to the studios, and that's the give and take. So I went to my first one and immediately got hooked. And it was one of those things where I just lucked into it because the guy who was running the art section was focused on music and I took over the movie section. I got really friendly with publicists. That turned into a radio gig. And I basically did college radio and newspaper for a couple of years. And then that snowballed into writing for magazines and newspapers and eventually online work. You know, because of that, I've covered, you know, the obvious screenings, interviews, but I've also done film festivals. I've covered the Oscars. Anything remotely associated with film that I'm interested in, I've been able to get in one way or another. I'm trying to not make that sound egotistical, but it's been a hell of a ride, I can say that.
It's definitely something that's interesting and working. What I've heard from a lot of people who... some are actual critics, some are people who just read and kind of interpret, is some of them say that most critics today, especially the online set, the people who can just, as I said, spend $30 and get a page up, as long as they know a couple of tricks here and there and can read a couple of tutorials, is that 90% of the people who are doing film criticism today, most of them are people who are just doing it as a side gig or even just... and especially as a way into talking about film and getting into film works. Were you guys ever thinking about getting into film in some shape or form?
Well, let me jump.
All right, Kevin, you go first.
Okay, I'll jump in. I actually was an independent filmmaker from about the year 2000 until about 2003, 2004. So I did do it from the independent grassroots thing. I started doing like a lot of short films and actually got some notice on the internet just because we just put stupid shit up. I mean, it was nothing intellectual. But I also directed a mockumentary at one point that went to some film festivals. And the problem with film making is there's an old saying in filmmaking is if you want to make a small fortune in film, the best way is to start with a big fortune. It is really expensive. Even nowadays with digital technology, it's really expensive because you got to pay for even if you can get everything done for free, you still got to buy the film stock or the tape stock, and you got to burn DVDs. You got to deal with postage. And even if you can do something for $3,000, you still got to come up with $3,000, which is dirt cheap. So I have done it on filmmaking. I've worked on bigger productions as well, sort of like mid-level productions. But I just went to film criticism because it didn't cost as much.
It was only $30.
Yeah, it was cheap. And you're not going to make a fortune doing film criticism either. Filmmaking is very complex, and I don't know if I have the intestinal fortitude to take it for that long.
Okay.
So. That's my story.
Marco?
I'm kind of on the same page with Kevin. I'm a filmmaker too, and I've been doing it for the same amount of time that I've been doing film criticism. The more comfortable I get with film critics in my area and even outside of that festival, the more I'm realizing that a lot of film critics are filmmakers on the side. And maybe on the side is a bad way of putting it, but basically, you know, there's that obvious link between writing about someone else's movies and wanting to make your own. And, you know, maybe 60 to 70% of the critics in my area are involved in some level of filmmaking, whether it's screenwriting or just shooting commercials or making their own product. But there's something very appealing about, you know, like, Kevin, I don't know how many movies you see a year, but the average critic, we sit down and we see so much crap that, I guess I've had these conversations where we feel inspired, like, you know what, I can make a better movie than that bullshit Ride Wars, or, you know, Paul Blart, who the fuck made that? It almost like it inspires you in the best way possible. And, you know, I've done mid-level productions too. Like, I've just done like grip work and lighting shit around here when they shoot local, like independent films or whatever they need. But, I've tried to get my feet wet, in every level of filmmaking possible, just to, you know, just to see what I can do. And if it's something that, like Kevin said, something that's for me, or if, and the more I'm doing it, the more I'm realizing that I love filmmaking. It's a very arduous task, but I also love film criticism. I love being a film writer. And if for some reason filmmaking doesn't work out for me, I'm completely content with being a film writer full time and just taking that on, because there's the opposite end of that, where I've met critics who are completely, they're frustrated filmmakers, and they're only doing it, you know, just to like pay for their own projects and get their own shit off the ground. But if that doesn't work, then, you know, they're terrible film critics, but they're aspiring filmmakers, if that makes any sense.
Well, and it is different nowadays because of, I think because of the ability to do online stuff, is there's way more film critics out there, and it's really opened up the field. Whereas back in, you know, back like in the 70s and 80s when I was a kid and my dad would read the paper, and the local film critic who recently just got fired in my town, or was bought out rather. You know, these guys weren't filmmakers. They were these old fuddy duddies. And in my town, they were beards and they had tweed coats, you know, and they'd go to the theaters. And these are the people doing film criticism. Whereas nowadays, there's a huge crossover, because it's people in their 20s who are getting interested in both.
That's true. I remember one of my first screenings. I think it was like Starship Troopers or something, and it's at this very tiny screening room in San Francisco. And I walk in as like a fucking college critic, and I'm the only kid there. Everyone else, you know, tweed coats, you know, hats, very, very pompously dressed. Next, pompously dressed, I shouldn't have said that. But you know what? They're very adult,
mature. You can say that.
And but all these fucking assholes who were watching Starship Troopers looked at me weird, and they're like, They kind of gave me this look, like, you know, Transformers is playing across the street. You have the wrong theater, son. And I just felt like for the first maybe 4 or 5 years of me writing, I totally felt like this. You know, not that I had to prove myself, because I just didn't give a shit. But I always felt, you know, I would walk in, especially when we did the smaller screenings and in these really cramped screening rooms, I always felt like it's almost like the adults looking after the kid. Like, oh, you're here again. Pat on the head. Good for you. Watching just as much. Go ahead.
I was just saying that attitude's still out there. That attitude's still out there with if you talk print critics and some older critics out there, they still kind of look down on either the younger or the more online-based critics as children, like
absolutely.
You just said.
But the thing is, with, you know, there are more online critics coming in, more critics. So that divide is shrinking. You know, I think that because, you know, when I was starting out, I feel so fucking old saying that, but it's true. You know, I would maybe run into like one or two critics or writers my own age, you know, maybe every year or so. But now I see, you know, I see college critics coming in. I see younger webmasters coming in and watching, you know, 200-300 movies a year, just like, you know, the old guard or the so-called serious print critics, which I think is a bullshit term, but I just think that age gap is shrinking, and there's nothing wrong with that. I understand, you know, some people are very threatened by that, for good and bad reasons. But as someone who started out young, and someone who's seeing that change, I have no problems with that. I just have problems with younger critics I've seen come in and only come in for just to take advantage of goodies. You know, these are the critics who come in and only want to do it because they want to meet Brad Pitt or X or Y. They don't come in and they don't really give a shit about movies. They just want they just want to meet celebrities and go to the parties. And that's not film criticism. That's just fucking around.
Yeah. Well, and also what you get is you get the people. I've always seen this just locally. I've seen it with websites and stuff like that I know, because there's quite a few websites that are based in Columbus or have main critics in Columbus. People start showing up like around late April, being like, "Yeah, I want to be a critic." And it's just so they can get into the free screenings of the big movies for the summer. And, you know, when you hit the doldrums like now, and you're running into September, or if you're in January, these people disappear, because I think to be a critic, to actually be a serious critic, you got to see everything, and you got to do it for a year so you can get past the whole, oh, it's a free movie, so it sucked, but it was still kind of fun attitude, which a lot of new critics have. You know, and so that then when you see a good movie, you appreciate it. And when you see a bad movie, you can still see it for what it is, and the fact that it wasted your time.
I
get a lot of people who say, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You guys are talking a lot about how the actual nature of the studios handing you this free criticism, this free screenings to go and see these films and then talk about them. Hopefully, that you will like it, and then you'll go and tell people, fuck, go see it. However, we all know that doesn't work.
I don't know. I think it's, I mean, technically it is a free screening, but I don't think it's free for us. I mean, there's still work to be done. Like, you know, it's free for, like, everyone else who wants tickets off the radio or magazines, but for us, I totally don't mean to sound pompous by saying this, but our job is to go to these screenings and then write about it. That's, you know, you're technically going to work. And then when somebody...
Well, I'll give you a great example.
I'm like, oh, all right, go ahead.
No, finish what you're saying.
Okay, I was going to say, so many people who come up to me and they're like, oh, you have such a great job. I totally love to go to the movies all the time and see everything like you. But what I always say is, you know, first of all, like I brought you to like one movie. Or maybe whatever, you know, two or whatever the fuck it is. But they don't have to sit through everything like all of us do. They don't have to sit through the bad movies. They don't have to sit through the January slump or the September slump. They get to pick and choose what they want to see. And after a while, like, hardcore critics see anywhere between, like, 200 and 300 movies a year. There's a lot of shit in those 200 and 300 movies. So after a while, it's not like, oh, yay, it's a free screening. Like Kevin was saying, you know, that kind of that fun factor of a screening completely dies very fast, and it just becomes a reality of, like, fuck, I have to... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I'll give you a great example of that. Last September, we had three screenings in one day, and it was How to Lose Friends and Alienate People, Appaloosa, and Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Now, How to Lose Friends sucked, but the other two were decent movies. But it was still three movies in a day. That's a long haul. And by the time Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist came around, I'm just like, I don't want to be here. You know, it is work after a while. And over the course of the year, there's maybe a dozen, if that, movies that I'm like really like, I cannot wait to see this. I am going out of my way to see this. Even the ones that are decent, you're still kind of like Inglourious Basterds, which came out, which was a good movie, but it was still it was a hassle. I had to find a babysitter. I had to go and... It's 2.5 hours out of your day, and I got a stack of other things I have to do. So, you know, it's not just, oh, hey, I got nothing to do on a Tuesday night. I'm going to take advantage of these passes I want on a radio station. It sounds like we're bitching, which is really pretentious, but it's just the reality is it is work, and that's what not everybody realizes. Think of it like a porn star.
I can completely understand with you guys, because as much as I see a lot of movies a year, but I definitely don't think I touch the 200-300 count, especially when you're talking about new films in a year. Like,
no, that was me sounding pompous.
And I mean, also, since I'm doing all my crap by myself and whatever, and since I have no publicist out here asking me to go and see films. I go and see basically what I want, plus a couple extra that I'll go to because I feel like I wanna write something. Because I generally, like this year, I made a decision that I'm going to at least write one to three reviews a week. And I generally try...
That's stamp.
Yeah, I generally try to get out to the theater and go and see whatever is there. As much as I'll bitch and moan like that... Crap, Inglourious Basterds hasn't come out yet, or whatever madness, because I don't live in the States, and I have to, and while I'm reading all these sites, I'm like, another trailer for Avatar, and and I have to wait an extra 2 months, and stuff. I have lots of problems with my theater, and the people who run the theater out here, like, not so much personal as I think they're just a bunch of idiots, and don't know what they're doing. But then again, that's what you get when you have a monopoly.
Advanced screenings down in of the woods.
What?
I said they probably don't have any advanced screenings in your neck of the woods either. Do they even screen stuff early for your local press at all out there?
Our local press, they don't. I will see movie reviews which are taken from syndicated from other places. So I don't think there's anyone locally doing film reviews.
Yeah. So you don't even have that option.
No, I don't have the option of like signing up to some critic list and hoping and praying that they'll call me and say, hey, we can give you a pass for this film so you can go and see it early and talk about it. No, I pay for every film that I go to. So, I mean, this year I've seen, I think maybe 40 films at the theater so far. Mm-hmm. and the thing about it is that I may try to avoid some of the completely hard ones, like, but at the same time, I still go to most of them. Like, what was it? I went to Chandichuk this week, the Bollywood film, Bollywood Kung Fu film. Have you guys seen that at all?
I've heard of it.
I actually have. Yeah, the way things work for me is I live in what they call in America flyover country. So it's like you're lucky to get certain screenings, and when they roll out like limited release stuff, like smaller stuff, it hits New York and LA first, or San Francisco and Chicago, if you know, but it doesn't come to Columbus until months after it's hit the big places. So even if I'm going to do a radio review, which I do, I put my stuff up on a National Clear Channel Wire, but they're not interested in Wire reviews of a movie that came out in New York and LA 4 months ago. So I don't cover very much limited release stuff. So I know exactly where you're coming from in terms of that.
And I mean, one of the things that really get to me when you're talking about online is that since we're online, I basically think of the internet as its own country. Everyone is seeing everything at the same time. So if you are seeing a film, as you said, 2 months late because they didn't show it in your area, then that's more or less a wasted post.
Yeah. Well, and the studios are even responding to that to a certain degree, because for really huge releases, you're getting worldwide releases all on the same day, or worldwide screenings. Indiana Jones last summer, they screened it in Cannes, and then they everywhere in the world, they screened at the same time that it played at Cannes. So like the day it was playing at Cannes, we had a screening at like 2 p.m. And it was like a Sunday or something. So they will do that now for the big releases, so you don't get these leaking reviews from different countries. Because every now and then they'll like Shorts, which opened last weekend, that thing opened in like Australia or something, like a couple weeks earlier, and you got movies like Taken that was out in the UK months before or a year before it even came out in the States.
Yeah, I know. I actually, that was possibly the first film I can remember in recent history that I got before the States, because I got that last October.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything you want to say on this, Marco? Like,
I was just thinking that sometimes it could be like different studios are handling different territories, so, you know, they can't get their schedules right, or they can't figure out, you know, when to release it. So, you know, the international territories have their own calendars, so they release it on one date, which, you know, for the most part, I guess the U.S. just figures it out right around the same time or a little bit before. But every now and then you'll get like a Taken, or, you know, I don't know what's another big one. Like, I know Shutter Island got moved, but, you know, here's the thing. Is the international plan still to roll it out in October? Because if it is, then that means they're going to completely get it in October, and we're going to wait. You know, by the time it's coming out here, DVDs will already be coming out, you know, in Japan or wherever it is. But it could be the same deal as Taken, where, you know, everyone's getting bootlegs online and they don't have to pay to go see it.
Well, I mean,
yeah. although Taken did very well in the theater, the bootlegs didn't really impact the box office for Taken, because it was a big hit in the States.
No, I don't think the any kind of bootleg argument that makes a big dent in terms of ticket sales was debunked when Wolverine came out. And you know, that was a mass one where everyone's like, you know what, it's gonna fuck up the box office. No one's gonna go see it because they'll just watch it at home. well, shitty movie, but still, you know, it opened huge. It made its money back in international sales, and, you know, it was like a big fuck you to the internet.
That movie was saved by Fox lying through their teeth.
Basically,
actually,
yeah.
Here's the thing. This is my take on the Wolverine thing. I thought the bootleg helped it because, A, it created buzz. Everybody was writing about it like a month before it came out, where normally people aren't caring about it. And, B, it was an incomplete cut. It didn't have effects. It didn't have a full sound mix. So anybody who bothered to go see the bootleg still went to go see the movie. To in the theaters, right, to see the effects. And then the other thing that really helped it out is it was the first out of the gate. In the last couple of years, the first movie out of the gate is going to make a lot of money. Iron Man last year, Spider-Man 3 the year before. These are movies that did exceptionally well just being the first one out of the gate. And like if Star Trek had come out first and then the next week Wolverine would have been crushed by Star Trek, which it wasn't.
I mean, the one thing that I found hilarious about that film, I think you're totally right about that, the first week. Because, I mean, most people I know who are, like, summer blockbuster people, you know, the guys who won't go to the theater except for when Transformers comes out. Those guys. Those are the guys who head out as soon as May hits. But one thing that I found which was quite hilarious about that film is that when it leaked, Fox came out and was talking about how, no, it's not the final cut. There are other things we changed, which is all those reshoots we were talking about, which was utter bullshit. Only thing that was added in that film was the last 30 seconds where they threw in those after credit stuff. I mean, other than the effects.
Going back to your – I want to make a point about print criticism versus internet criticism, and this is just me getting maybe a little bit petulant, but that's okay. I did an article for Film School Rejects a year or so ago.
I have it up here.
Close to 2 years.
I have it up here. The death of the print critic? I actually Googled print print critic, and yours was like the third or second that came up.
Oh, no shit. That's awesome. But the point I make in there is print criticism is dead. And it's been dead for a couple years. And it's still lingering. I mean, your big major papers are losing their critics. They're laying them off. They're laying them off of Newsweek. They're laying them off of big city newspapers. The only places that you still see print criticism working is in like limited papers, like free papers, you know, sort of these art papers that they can then get money from advertising, or the AP Wire. But otherwise, print criticism is dead, and this is why. It's because of the internet for two big reasons. First of all, you can index reviews. You've got movie sites like Metacritic, Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb that you can go and you can see, oh, well, this person liked Up. Did he like the other Pixar films? And you can get that immediately, even on people's own websites. You know, if you go to my website, you can be like, oh, well, this guy liked this movie. Let's search his name and find something else. You can't do that in the paper. But also, they'll withhold screenings. Like, they didn't screen Final Destination or Halloween 2. Yet, within hours of the movie's release, people are going and seeing the movies, writing the reviews, getting it online. And it's like in Columbus, I live in Columbus. I can go see a movie. If they don't screen it, even if they don't have a midnight show, I can go at 10 or 10:30 in the morning, watch the movie, write a review, have it online before it opens in Los Angeles, which is pretty powerful. You can't do that on print.
You both of you guys said you started out in print, right?
I started on the internet and I found some print outlets. I don't do a whole lot of print. Right now, most of my stuff's internet and radio.
Okay, well, Marco, you started out in print, right?
Yes, I did.
What was like the huge difference you found when you moved from print to online? What was the huge difference you found using those mediums?
Well, in terms of you know, people I work with, or in terms of writing style, or specifically, what are you asking?
In terms of anything you can find a difference with, you know, it's just general.
Well, because you know, here's the short answer is I didn't really find that much different between the two mediums. I mean, I can get what Kevin's saying, that it's a lot faster access to go online And, you know, the double-edged sword of that is that even print critics, their stuff is online, too. You know, I don't know if they've been forced to or not, but, you know, whether they volunteer or not, these same print critics still have company websites that house all of their reviews. So most people aren't reading newspapers. They're going online for these reviews. They're going online, period. But if they want to get movie times, if they want to get movie reviews or Google somebody, see what movies they've liked, what they haven't, they can't. It's not so much that they can't. I mean, yes, they cannot. They also, it's a lot faster, and most people just go online anyway. It's a lot faster to get stuff on your iPhone. It's a lot faster to go on your laptop and say, hey, you know, this, like Google whatever, you know, Kevin or, you know, me or whoever the hell it is, and say, what, you know, my name plus review. Did he like it? Did he not? Instead of, like, having to figure out, oh, when did the movie come out? Fuck, okay, August, whatever. Go back, find the newspaper, find the whatever. You can just find the clip online in 2 seconds. But here's the other thing of that. And Kevin, I don't mean this as a knock. I'm just curious what your opinion of this is. Sure. I have to say that because I'm not trying to be a dick. I'm just genuinely curious. with that setup, you know. But being primary online guy, what's your opinion of online writers who, not so much, I mean, what I say is online writers who are they're always in a race to be first, whether it's with a film review or a news item or something. It's like, I've read some things online that just sound like badly written or badly researched, and it's not some, you know, it just seems like they don't give a shit. They just want to be first to report it, or they want to be the first review of Halloween 2 after the midnight show, instead of, like, giving it a couple hours to let the article breathe and, you know, actually just be a better written review, just waiting instead of writing, you know, a quick 1,000 words that, for the most part, may not make sense. But you know what? It was first. If you do a Google search right now, you know, it's there. It's one of the first links. And I mean, basically, I'm saying the same thing over and over again. But what do you think of that?
Well, the big thing is, you're right. First of all, I will say that there's a big difference between people that are writing for papers or magazines than the internet. And the big reason for that is the accessibility. When you're writing a website, even if you're writing for a relatively big website, there's not a big copy editing process. If you're writing for a newspaper, you got copy editors and you got feature editors, and people are looking at your stuff, and you also have to apply for positions at your local paper, and they're going to look at writing samples. Whereas the internet, yes, there are sites that you can apply for, but smaller sites, if you write your own website, you can put whatever you want up. I mean, you can, and there are people who've built huge websites out of just being the first to have something up, and their posts are, wow, look at this new poster for Alice in Wonderland, and it's there, and they get the credit because it's first online, but that doesn't make them a good writer, but it does, it makes them a good disseminator of information. But the actual writers, yes, there are people who try and get it up as fast as they can, but there's also people that are writing it and posting their own stuff. But they don't have somebody to go over their work. They don't have somebody to spell check it. They don't have somebody to read it for readability. So you've lost a whole lot of steps in the process, which kind of makes the internet critics a little more unwashed. And I'm guilty of that too. I once wrote an article for The Departed, and I wrote it after being on the road for like 4 hours and getting to a hotel room at like 3 a.m. and I had to write it. And I had just spelling errors everywhere, and I linked it off of Rotten Tomatoes, and I got flames all over the place going, you're an idiot. How do you even get your stuff published? So I mean, I've been the result of that. The other thing about online critics in general, and this is not to paint with a broad brush or anything like that. There's a much larger fanboy representation on the internet, because there's a lot of people build their entire websites or trying to do what Harry Knowles did this years ago, and he was one of the first. But there are people out now who are just like, I love movies, this is awesome. And, you know, the love for Transformers from certain people on the internet is rabid, just because Michael Bay is such a fanboy favorite. Whereas, like, if you take the people who work for a paper and quote-unquote more serious journalists, and I say that with tongue firmly in cheek, they're going to look for something much more in a film as opposed to just big explosions in Megan Fox's uterus.
So what you're saying in and of itself, Kevin Carr, is you once had a mustache and a bowler hat.
No, you know, this is what's so funny, though, is this has worked to my advantage because I have developed a reputation for people who've read my stuff and who listen to my podcast and listen to me on the radio that and I've had people come up and say, well, I like your stuff because you look at things like just the average guy. You look at it for entertainment value. You're not looking for, you know, the artistic vision or anything. You're not like, you know, like Jeffrey Lyons, who I once called pompous in a review, and he wrote me a flame about it and complained that I called him pompous, but which I thought was rather pompous of him. But I've had people say that they like that because I kind of speak to middle America, which you don't always, even though you have critics like from the 80s, 70s and 80s that were in middle America, but they were still your basic art house critic. And that's why that's where I've gotten a lot of interest. And I think that plays better on the internet. It doesn't play as well in print for some reason. That's why I'm not big in print. But you know, you want somebody to kind of gush over a movie because it's just really cool. That plays better on the internet and on the radio, and even on television. Whereas if you're reading it in like a newspaper or an art magazine, I don't think the fanboy angle plays as well.
I think it might be debatable. I think it does. I don't think it plays as strongly, but I'm sure it still plays to some degree. Obviously, the internet's a different monster, and you know it's more appealing to fanboys. But I would argue that fanboys do still read magazines and newspapers. Maybe not obviously as much as before, but that medium still exists for them, and it's still accessible to them in one way or another. Even something like that. Like I've had. To me, the best. The best way I can measure, you know, whether you're a real film critic or not is, you know, do you actually love movies? I mean, it goes back to what I was saying before. Do you actually know your shit when it comes to movies? You know, can you say, it's not so much to say, you know, like Michael Bay did this, this, and this, but, you know, I guess it's like straddling the line between being, you know, cool and pompous, if that makes any sense. But you want to give the reader something to just grab onto. You don't just want to say the movie was cool, period. The movie was cool, but why was it cool? Because of this, or this, or this. So many reviews that I've read are just, you know, I liked it, I didn't like it, or even just the very stereotypical, it was all right. Well, what the fuck does that even mean, it was all right? You know, I get that if you're just like on a Saturday night and you buy your ticket, you paid your $10, you're entitled to say meh if that's what you feel. But if you call yourself a professional film critic, it's part of your job to give a shit and to say, I did not like it because, or I did like it because of this. That's the whole point of the job.
Well, finish your slot. Sorry.
All right, I'll be quick. I was going to say, I've talked to certain webmasters who've been very brave and actually said, you know, I don't consider myself a film critic. I'm just, you know, I'm a web guy. I'm like, you know, I do news or I do this. And, I've thought that, you know, it's a very brave thing to say, especially when I disagree with them and I say, you know what, you love film and you review it just as much as I do or any one of our colleagues, I think you're wrong, but I just don't know if there's any kind of, I mean, primarily as an online guy, Kevin, how big do you think the divide is between, you know, webmasters and, you know, print critics? Do you think it's that big or is that, you know, just kind of like a myth on my part?
Well, you're applying a lot of weight to the film to the word critic, and I part of it is I just don't I use it as more or less a descriptor. Whereas what's funny if you talk in this goes back to the independent film discussion. When I was doing independent film, I hated the term artist because I thought it was so pretentious. People are going, "Oh, you're artist, and you need to be behind your art." And I'm like, I'm just making a movie, you know, and so I kind of felt the same way about the word artist that you do about critic. And I guess you're right. I think if you're going to be a critic, if you're criticizing the film, if you're being critical of the film in the very either constructive or deconstructive way, I think that being a critic is somebody who – and some people prefer the term reviewer, so you talk about it. And it's not less – not because a critic has that, you know, that mustache and hat sort of mentality.
Yeah. But really,
I think,
connotation to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're right. Anybody who's going to comment on film a lot on a regular basis is a critic. But I do think if you want to be taken seriously, just as somebody with an opinion, you're right. You got to back that up. And that's going back to Transformers, which I thought was an okay film, but I'm like, it had serious problems with it. I mean, it was for, if you want to see robots blown shit up, go see this movie. But one of the things that irritated me about a lot of the positive reviews out there for Transformers, and not that they were positive reviews, but there was this great divide. And there were people who were like, well, it has its problems. I mean, this doesn't make sense. And it was too long and it's supposed to be a kid's movie, but it's got drugs in it. And what, this doesn't make any sense. As opposed to the people who just loved it. And all the reviews and for Michael Bay stuff is like, everyone's like, oh, it was awesome. It was just blow in your face awesomeness. And it was just wall to wall awesomeness. And if you didn't like it, you don't like fun movies. And it was great. And it was awesome. And there was no substance behind the reviews. It was just berating people into trying to convince them that it was awesome. That to me is not criticism. That's just gushing. And I think that is where certain, you know, people who like you said, Andrew, the people on top of the whole thing, like being the webmasters, they get to see it and they think it's awesome. So they don't actually give an analysis of it and they can't explain why it's awesome. It's just awesome because they're blowing shit up. And oh my God, there's Optimus Prime and he's walking around. And isn't that cool? I think you do need to have something to back it up. And you're right, Marco. There's a lot of people out there on the internet who don't give that at least a level. And I'm not talking, you don't have to write a 2,000 word review. You can do it in 500 words, but you gotta at least be, you know, have some sort of intelligence and you have to be able to back yourself up.
Hey, Kevin. Yeah. You're sounding pretty much like a robot right now. Is something going on with your mic?
Oh, am I acting weird? Am I sounding odd?
You're sounding like you're going through time travel.
Oh, am I crunching up? I don't know.
No, it's not so much crunching. All right, everything sounds okay now, so maybe that was just something weird on my end. You mentioned a lot... What were you saying?
Oh, no, I was just saying it's Skype. Skype does that now and then.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of things a while ago. You mentioned, like, first of all, how people will look at your reviews as a review of the regular guy, and generally when I see your reviews, there's something special about them. Like, I will look and I will see your review
in a good way special.
In a good way special.
Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like special ed by accident.
Like, I mean, I'll look at your review of G-Force and I will and because, you know, I'm me, I'll scroll down and I'll look at the letter and I'll be like, he gave it a B or some shit. And I'm like, how can this movie be a B? And then I'll actually sit down and read through the review and I'll realize that you're really just taking the perspective of more or less the demographic that the film is going for, rather than you being, yes, I'm 45 or 50 years old and I don't like children's films. I'm tired of seeing stupid shit blow up for no reason. Give me Moon,
talking
please.
Animals and all that crap. Right.
Okay, and I mean, do you think that that's something that came about mainly because of the internet, or is it because of, we've been talking about print critics and their bowler hats? I won't bother with the rest of their anatomy.
No more mustaches.
No, they shaved those a couple years back.
Now we can do like fedoras and canes or something.
Like, do you think we mentioned about the fanboyism on the internet? But when we talk about proper film critics on the internet, do you see that the internet is what brought about this need for understanding before judging a film, if anything, if you can call it that?
Well, let's put it this way. I don't know a whole lot of critics that will do that. I mean, I'm not trying to stand out, but generally when I see a movie, because like G-Force is a great example. I have three sons, but one's too young to see movies. I got a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old at home.
Do you let them write the reviews?
G-Force. Yeah, I took them to G-Force, and they freaking loved it, you know, because – and that's who it's for. And I remember I took them to go see Alvin and the Chipmunks a couple of years ago. And, well, yeah, if you're 25 and you're going out on a date and you want to impress this girl and you want to get in her pants, you're probably not going to take her to see G-Force.
You know, unless you know, she wants to see it.
You know, yeah, unless, yeah, unless your date's an 8-year-old boy.
And then, but, and then you just might be illegal.
No, but I do think that I always strive to at least know what the demographic is. And there are times when I see it and I'm like, well, I didn't like it, but you probably will. And I said that, like, Julie and Julia was a great example of a movie where I literally, and I described it to my wife when I got home, I said it was like being in a hotel fire. I just could not escape this movie. And I felt like I was going to die and suffocate. But I recognized that I was not the person this movie was made for. So generally, if I'm going to trash a movie, and I think that it's for a certain audience, I'll at least try and give a nod to that. And sometimes I can get into it, like G-Force was for kids, and it was totally it's a Disney kids movie. It's the Cat from Outer Space in modern times, you know? And so it was, I don't know if a lot of people do that. I do that and it plays well for me, but there are some people that don't. I don't know if that's more prevalent on the internet. I would actually say no. I think there's a lot of people that are like, Hannah Montana sucks as a movie. Why? Because it's Hannah Montana. And you're like, you're 25 years old and living in your mom's basement. You're not the target market for Hannah Montana. It's for tweens. Would the tweens like it, kind of thing? I think that goes on even less on the internet.
Anything to say about that, Marco?
No, I agree with Kevin.
Kevin is totally agreeable.
You don't want to come out with a giant anti-Hannah Montana sentiment or anything like that.
I was thinking about it, but now I'm...
No, but I think...
On the fucking stupid thing, Disney did send me the Blu-ray. And one of those things, or what the hell am I going to do with Hannah Montana? They sent me the Blu-rays of Anna Sling Blade in Adventureland. So I figured, you know... I don't mind Sling Blade, Adventureland's cool, but fucking Hannah Montana, why?
What you do at that point, Marco, is you email them back and you tell them your Blu-ray player can't play it.
Well, no, you don't even get that. I have to tell you, the Hannah Montana Blu-ray does come packaged with the DVD, so that wouldn't work.
That excuse just goes right out the window. Or it's like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe I'll send it to you, Andrew, and see. Like, you can write up a review of Hannah Montana.
I totally would, but I would be one of those guys saying I hated this movie. I need a 12-year-old to sit with me and watch it so she can write the review.
Now that's really gonna sound creepy. Please, somebody send me your 12-year-old so I should go watch Hannah Montana with me. No, it's totally innocent, seriously. And just for journalistic purposes, I need your child.
Like, one thing I wanted to ask you guys, because it looks like we've basically said the most we can say about film criticism, and especially when it comes to online, because... Other than what we've said, I think all we're going to do is we're going to talk about movies we love at this point. But what would you say to anyone who even, I mean, I know it sounds kind of odd, but would want to get into film criticism today? Would you tell them just pay your $30 or what else?
I would say educate yourself. And what I mean by that, I mean, besides The Office, is, you know, learn your shit by watching as many movies as possible. Read about film. You know, find your own voice, basically, I'm trying to say, because I know I've talked to a lot of film critics, filmmakers, or film writers, even, that just like to follow the crowd. They don't have their distinctive voice. They just, you know, they feel out what their friends think about, you know, a certain film, or they feel out what the internet thinks about a certain trailer or buzz on a film. They kind of just go with it, but they don't have, you know, they don't have a voice that defines them as a writer. You know, this doesn't, their reviews as a result end up sounding like, you know, a shitload of other reviews on the internet or in print for that matter. There's no difference between print journalism and online journalism when it comes to good and bad writing. It's just, I would say the best thing you can do is learn what you like or learn what you don't like, educate yourself by obviously, if you're going to be a film critic, obviously watch movies. I mean, I don't see the point in writers wanting to go for the freebies, you know, wanting to just write reviews so they can say they went to the Inglourious Basterds premiere. It just, I mean, shit, okay, you got to go, awesome, but the review looks like shit. And publicists aren't stupid. Publicists, readers especially, you know, they can tell hacks from the real writers. And, you know, they kind of just weed them out. You know, they can see when someone's in it, you know, just for the freebies and when people actually give a shit. It goes back to what I was saying when I was getting started. You know, I would get looks from these older critics kind of like, oh, this fucker's just here to meet celebrities. And it really wasn't true. I mean, I didn't have to prove anything to anyone, but deep down I knew this. I was taking this seriously, and I really wanted to do it. And it was because I still have a genuine love for film. I think that the best writers just kind of show that. They don't just say, this was good, bad, blank. It's just, you know, I like this because of this. It makes me think about this or whatever. I'm totally rambling. I'm sorry. But you guys go ahead.
No, man, you're making good points.
Yeah. But I got carried away, so this is Kevin's intro to just jump in there and say something and save my ass.
Well, I will say this, and this is not to downgrade actual print critics out there, but I would tell somebody who wants to get into it, into film criticism, I'd say what you told them, Andrew, pay your $30 and start putting it online, not because online's better than print, but it's impossible. You'd have a better job of getting a job, getting a seat in a symphony orchestra than getting a job as a print critic in today's day and age, because they're getting rid of them. They're scaling it all back and going to wire services. So there's no chance. I mean, unless you just luck out, you're not going to get a print job. So start doing it online. Cut your teeth. But the big thing is start actually writing reviews. See movies and review them, and you will learn that way. Simply because you'll get. You know, you'll be forced to think about it. You'll be forced to talk about it. You'll be forced to give your opinion as opposed to just ramble through it. And that's the way to do it. And see as many as you can, and see all types. See the good with the bad. If you just like horror and sci-fi and action movies, see every movie out there. See Julie and Julia. Go see Postgrad. See some of the worst crap that you've ever seen in your life, because those are some of the most fun reviews to write. But you got to see it all, and you got to do it for a year before you can
Go ahead, Marco. No, Marco, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I kind of get that, but at the same time, it's like life's too short. You know, there's so many great movies out there. Like, I understand, you know, maybe if you want to watch like an interesting mess, you know, something that tried for something and failed and is ultimately a bad movie, but. Don't fucking waste your time with, you know, Postgrad or whatever the hell it is. Those are universally hated movies for a reason. It is impossible to see every single movie ever made. It's just, you know, you can't do it. So why spend unnecessary time watching, you know, universally hated crap? If you're going to watch bad movies, you know, watch bad movies that appeal to you. Maybe watch like a bad Terry Gilliam movie or a bad, you know, Michael Mann film. But
if you're going to put stuff in your Netflix queue and you're going to go to the video, get the stuff that interests you. But if you want to start writing reviews, go see the two or three films that come out that weekend, or one or two. But if it's a week that nothing appeals to you, still go see a movie and write about it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Here's an interesting question that came up in the chat from Jadon the Don. He was asking, who are the critics you guys enjoy or respect or hate and disrespect? Kevin, if you can say.
Oh, I get to start with this one. the critics, the ones I like, you know what? I wouldn't say that there is any critic that I go to, like big name critic. Like, I mean, you got to love Robert Ebert just for his legacy. But in terms of like the big name critics, I really don't go to them. I like to read my contemporaries. You know, I write for Film School Reject, so I like to see.
You what can admit it, Kevin. You can admit it, Kevin. You read G-Man reviews.
Yes, every G-Man review. Well, no, I mean, I like to, I've been to your site. I've looked at some of the stuff. I like to see what other people are doing. I actually steer away from like the big, huge critics. Like, I don't read what Roger Ebert has to say about a movie until somebody's like, oh, this is a really funny line he had about this. And then I might go check it out. I like to read what people are writing, the contemporaries and the people that I'm, you know, quote unquote in competition with. Even though it's not competition, but the people that are writing about the people are going to be, if they're going to be quoted, like, for example, I got quoted in New York Daily News for my take on the Avatar Day from last week. Well, you know, I like to read. I saw who the other people, Slash Film was quoted in that. And I'm like, well, you know, I like to read what they write too, because these are the people they're going to, that people I'm being compared to, and that's who I like to at least kind of sample here and there, back and forth. And of course, G-Man reviews all the time.
Marco,
you know, G-Man reviews is the only website I respect. I just wanted to sell out completely and say fuck you to everyone else. And thank you for having me, Andrew. Might as well go out, you know, and say this is the end of my film writing career. You know, I agree with Kevin to an extent. I agree that, you know, asking me who my favorite film writer is kind of like asking me what my favorite movie is. I mean, there are way too many. And I think there, you know, I personally don't think there should be one choice. I think that, you know, you just there should be several people that you look to for certain types of genres or reviews, because I don't think that everyone will like this. I don't think it's possible for one critic to universally line up with your opinion. And I just have different people that I go to for different things. Even when I disagree with someone, as long as it's well, you know, it's a well-argued statement. You know, as long as, you know, they can back this shit up and it doesn't sound like a fucking preschooler wrote it. You know what? I like if they didn't. I'm not going to tell them to fucking love it, but they made good points. I can respect that. You know, those are the critics that I cling to. And Kevin was right. You know, whether people love him or hate him, Roger Ebert has contributed a lot to the legacy of film criticism and just films in general. You know, he's big on preserving older films, and a lot of critics around my area are big into that scene too. But I don't know. I feel like I said, I can't really pick one and say, this is my favorite. This is someone I like. I can, like I said, I like the people who take the time to write about film in an intelligent way and really back their shit up. Even if it's, you know, saying G-Force was an awesome movie. If you talk to anyone close to me, I was, for some reason, I just wanted to see that fucking G-Force. And I was just, I was half serious when I was telling people, like, you know what, we should go see G-Force. I can't believe you're... I was saying the whole week of opening, I was talking to friends, and I was like, you know, the balls on fucking Jerry Bruckheimer to do something like G-Force and, you know, put like market Nicolas Cage in this weird way. And everyone looked at me like I was fucking crazy. But you know what? I was enthusiastic about it. I was enthusiastic about it like a fucking kid. But I can respect people who dig that kind of stuff. I don't, it goes back to like the whole bowler hat type thing. I think, you know, it's obvious different medium now with online journalism, but I still believe that print critics, you know, now is, and even, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, there was a big chunk of these print critics, because I used to be one, that didn't, that weren't the Anton Egas, you know, that they weren't the critic. They could appreciate, you know, a bad film for being entertaining crap. You know, that's why they're called guilty pleasures. Every film lover has guilty pleasure. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, for some reason you're in the mood to watch Bad Boys or Swordfish, and it's like eating trash food. Like, you know it's bad for you,
Jesus.
But yeah, I know. Don't fucking laugh. Yeah, I know it's shit.
Wow.
I'm gonna get emails now. It's like, you fucking asshole, I can't believe you told people you love Swordfish.
Oh, don't.
That's
don't,
awesome. You choose a, you throw down for Swordfish. That's ballsy, man.
Don't.
I know.
That's
a
duty. It's the greatest movie ever.
Don't worry about it, Marco.
Just make it big.
I think it was yesterday or the day before, I tweeted that one of my total guilty pleasures is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, you know, it was today. I saw that.
Yeah.
You know, I got shit.
Yeah?
I used to. I used to write for Film Threat. I used to write articles. I haven't written for him for years, but I wrote a review for LXG, and it was like their year-end wrap-up. They basically say, well, if Kevin Carr was a superhero, his power was that he likes bad movies because of LXG. Which I thought it was okay, but yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, but you know, hey, G-Man reviews 10 stars out of 5.
Well, I mean, the only film critic I read is Kevin Carr, you know? I mean,
as you should.
No, man, I read at least around 20 film sites are in my Google Reader, and I read at least half the reviews that go up, especially if it's a film that I've already seen. I might skim them if I haven't seen them, but I like to, whenever I haven't seen a film, to go into it fresh, as fresh as I can. And then I'll go back to see what other people said once I've written about it or whatever. But I tend to read stuff from Eric D. Snyder. I like to read... Screen Rant puts up a couple cool reviews every once in a while. I like them. I love FSR. You know, they're one of my sites that I loved. I actually used to read that site just when I was starting to write film reviews. When I started writing film reviews...
somebody.
When I started writing film reviews, it was like just from my friends on Facebook. I'd post like a paragraph about a film, and I'd do like 4 or 3 films in a week. And it would be it would be insane. And then after around a year of that, I started making it more in depth. And then eventually, someone told me to just pay $30, and I started up the site.
Yeah, well, that's the way to do it.
But one of the sites that I have to say I'm not a huge fan of their reviews, is Variety. Even though they don't post any reviews.
Well, they're old school, though. That's that comes from the old school mentality, though. That's the old print critic mentality. I mean, I'm just mentioning that. That's where the roots are.
Yeah.
Do you read anything else in print, though? I mean, do you read other print critics?
Well, I mean, I don't read many print critics because print itself out here, the critics are just 13-year-olds loving Transformers, and I get annoyed reading those reviews. like one thing that drove me up the wall, my local theater, they have their website, Palace Amusement is the company, and you can go to the website. It's palaceamusement.com. It's one of the shittiest web pages you've ever seen.
Then why direct this there? What the hell?
No, I'm just pointing, like, if you go to...
Palace Theaters?
Palace Amusement. Palace, P-A-L-A. You know, let me throw it... Let me just...
I'm checking it out right now. This better not be like a... It's not. Like a porn site. Palace Amusement, yeah. Click here if you want milfs and pants.
No, this is the website for my local theater. They distribute all the films. And, like, you can go to each theater, and Carib 5 is the one that I go to usually. And you can see things like... You can see... They actually have, like, areas for reviews, but you have to log in to read them. And sometimes I, like, screenshot them and put them on Twitter. And one thing I found hilarious was when Harry Potter came out, they posted up that they were going to bring out Harry Potter, and I screenshotted, and people had posted 20 comments on this already, all 5 stars each, and no one had seen the film.
Well, at that theater. Just elsewhere, though, they have.
No, they were all saying... I haven't seen this movie, but I have to. 5 stars.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. Yeah. Well, that kind of happened. That kind of happened with that did kind of happen with what do you call it? Who do you call it? Transformers. Same thing happened. Oops.
Yeah, I'm calling back Marco. Apparently, we lost him.
Oh, did we lose him?
Yeah, I'm back, guys. I think I got disconnected for liking Swordfish.
Yeah, that's definitely what
happened. That's right, somebody hacked into your computer. It was Hugh Jackman going into your computer while he was getting a blowjob.
But
I will give you this for Swordfish. You do get to see Halle Berry's boobs in it. And that's one thing I got to point out. I have gotten a reputation for saying that boobs will make a better movie.
Yes, I hear that a lot on Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's absolutely true, and this is, if you're a filmmaker out there, put boobs in your movie. And when I say boobs, I mean women's boobs, because there's nothing worse than go on to a movie and it's like, it's going to have graphic nudity, and you just see cock for like 5 minutes.
You know what I find hilarious? Whenever people say that, I think of Knocked Up, the special edition DVD that we have. There was a special clip which was you get to see boobs, and then it's Katherine Heigl fully dressed and Seth Rogen shirtless walking around the place. And
if I want to see man boobs, I can go to my own website. Thank you very much.
Wow. That
way
picture,
to raise
that,
the bar.
I have told you, haven't I, that picture stopped me from listening to your podcast for quite some time.
I think you did. It's funny because when I do a lot of radio in various in various cities around the States, and somebody will be like, and every now and then I get to go, oh, I went to your site. Which one are you? And I'm like, yeah, the one with no shirt on, that's me. And they're like, oh, I thought you were the other one. So yeah, it's a great conversation starter. Go to it if you haven't. FatGuysInTheMovies.com.
Well,
wait, is that the gimmick? You guys do the podcast with no shirt on, or how does that work?
Oh no, I do it with no pants on now. But I have underwear on. I'm not a total, snub.
I imagine that you attend screenings naked.
it's just me and Neil. I don't know if he's naked or not. He usually has people in his in his section of the Magical Studio in the Sky when that goes on. But I
room with Neil at Sundance, so I don't know if I think I may.
Oh, you did?
We've done the Sundance thing with him. Me, Neil, Pete, and Alex for like 2 years now, and it's that house is like a chaotic mix of awesome some nights, but some other nights it's like holy shit.
It has a certain way, strange, a strange and curious odor about the place, is what you're saying.
Oh,
Neil's very neat, though. Neil is very, very neat. He's like borderline scary neat. So.
Well, yeah, no. I didn't mean it in like, there's a bad smell, there's like trash everywhere. It's just like basically like me coming in. I remember the first year I went to Sundance with these guys, like they're all webmasters, obviously, and I would come home from a screening and, all of them in the kitchen, updating their sites, and I looked at them like, holy shit, you guys are awesome. You guys are having your own sites. You guys are doing this. And I remember Alex looked at me. Alex from First Show I Met looked at me and he says, no, you're the lucky one because you don't have to write anything until you go home. we're the ones that constantly have to update the fucking sites and do the news. And I was like, good point. Because as a writer, that's particularly my assignment. Actually, I take that back. I think that's one of the things that's changed in print and online. When I was a print critic or writer covering film festivals and like press junkets and stuff, they would want their coverage, whenever I was ready with it. If I was going to Sundance, they could say, when you come home, give us what you have, and then take a couple days and make sure it looks good.
Get it to us by spring break.
Totally, and if I'm writing for like box office magazine or any kind of website, they want content like that night, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just it's something that at first I wasn't used to. I was like, you mean I can't take a couple extra days to like write out my review a little more? No, we want it like the hour after the screening ends. So a couple years ago it was really weird. In a cool way, I'd walk around Sundance, do my own thing, and then, the guys are in the condo updating their sites, and I could write whatever I want when I came home. And then this last year, I don't want to use the word forced because I wasn't, I enjoyed doing it, but I was writing reviews and keeping up with everything, and it's just a different pace. It's still the same kind of awesome, but it's just a different pace of writing and working.
Well, Comic-Con's the same way. I covered Comic-Con for Film School Rejects last, not this year, but 2 years prior, both those 2 years, right. 2007 and 2008. And the amount of pressure to get your shit up. And we were doing – and I was editing video, which I don't know if you've ever edited video, but that stuff takes forever. And it's just kind of like – I mean, I was – it was – I was in my hotel room in the middle of the night editing shit up, and I'm like, oh my God. And then we got home, and I'm like, Neil, I still got – he's like, well, I need it by the end of the week. And I'm like, oh my God. And I was so such under the gun. But that's the way the internet is. And even now, you don't have to go to Comic-Con anymore. You don't even have to go. Yeah. All you have to do is just sit there and look at people's live blogs because, I mean, it's like, oh, I'm the first one up. And you're right. And the way it works is people are like, I'm the first one to get this information out there.
Right.
A millisecond later, everybody else has it. So that they're, you know, you don't have to be. It's gotten so fast that it's, unless it's a review, unless it's a really early review, and you're lucky enough to get the first one to get the Inglourious Basterds review up, or the first four or five, you're almost better off waiting until later on Friday to post a review. And if you're going to link it off a site like Rotten Tomatoes, then you're a little fresher, and so people then are reading it through the weekend. Otherwise, your stuff gets buried very quickly.
All you need is Twitter.
Twitter.
I have a quick question for you, for Kevin. I have a quick question as an online guy, and I felt this both ways because I'm an online guy and a print guy, depending on who I'm writing for. But what's your feeling on publicists and publicity houses and how online critics are treated versus print critics?
Well, they are treated very different. They really, really are. Yeah. And the thing is. Yeah. You got to think of the way the publicists. There's still a lot of dinosaurs in publicists that it's the most important thing to be is to be on broadcast television. That if you can be on broadcast television and have control over that, the world is your oyster. They will do private screenings for you. They'll fly you out to junkets and anything because broadcast is the most widely dispersed. The second would be print, which is bullshit because print critics have less of a readership. I reach way more people than the print critic in Columbus by like a factor of 10 just through all the crap that I do. But it's still hard to get respect as an online or even a radio journalist. But see, now the publicists – and it's not really the publicists as much as it's a lot of time dictated by the studios now. We're in this weird position where – like whereas like 5-6 years ago, you couldn't get on a press. It was really hard to get on a press list as an online journalist because anybody could put up a blog and they had millions of people coming in wanting passes to see Star Wars or whatever. So now they recognize us and they like, oh, well, they exist, but they don't know what the hell to do with us because on one hand, they want to show us certain movies like the Slim Selects online people got to see G.I. Joe, but other ones didn't. And they don't quite know how to handle because in general, print and radio and television, they are used to dealing with, and I don't want to say more professional, but a more traditional way of sort of negotiating. Okay, well, we'll post the review, but we'll hold it until it's ready. Whereas it's so hard to control an online person. They're like, don't run this until day of release. And they're like, yeah, I won't. Boom. Then they put it up there. And then you got people sneaking into screenings and writing fake, you know, like writing under different names and nobody knows who you are. And you can win tickets at a radio station and then still post the review on somebody else's site. They just don't have control of the online press that they do. And I don't think they quite recognize how to handle us as a group. I think within the next 5 years, it's going to change. I really think within, you know, by 2012, 2013, it's going to be all about online. And once they figure out how to relate to us better, I think they'll really start to woo online people, especially with Twitter. I mean, I went and saw Final Destination on Friday, came home on Twitter, and I'm like, that movie was shit. And I got on this big, long tweet discussion with Scott Weinberg from Cinematical, and we were just trashing the movie, and it was just this half hour of us just trashing the movie back and forth. There's no way to contain that, and so I think that they've just got to learn. They're learning to. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see much more of them picking and choosing and being like, "Ooh, this guy likes this kind of movie. Let's let him see it, but this guy doesn't. Let's not." And I think you're going to see that over the next couple of years, and then I think the worm's going to turn a little bit, and then they're just going to deal with the publications and just kind of learn to find a way to handle the critics. But I right now, I just don't think they know what to do with us.
But do you think that critics should be controlled? Do you think that kind of shit should be controlled at all?
Not controlled. Controlled's a bad term for it. It's more or less – well, this is the thing. The studio is doing you a favor by showing you the movie. So if they request that you hold the review until opening day –
by giving them press.
Well, but if they request it, they say, we'll show you the movie, but don't. Well, all I'm saying is if the publicist says, we'll show you the movie, but hold the review until opening day, I hold the review till opening day, because that's just out of respect. And what I've always said is, I said, I'll hold the review until I would normally see it myself. You're just saving me $8 to $10 from seeing it myself. But, right. If they don't want early reviews, some studios don't want early reviews. Disney is notorious for not wanting early reviews. No matter, even if it's like a Pixar movie that 98% of the critics love, they don't like early reviews. And I can respect that, because that's the deal they have with print. If they're going to show me Up 2 weeks ahead of time, and they're like, well, we'd prefer you to hold the review, and I post it 2 weeks early, they could just not, then they know who did it, and they could say, we're not going to do it. I'm not saying that they should control your opinion. But I think it's completely appropriate for them to say, well, if we're going to show this to you early, we'd like to at least request that you not run it until this date. But that's what I mean by control. But okay. You don't have that on the internet.
Yeah, I understand that meaning of control. But the thing is that earlier you were talking about the difference of film and print. And since everything is indexed, what's the difference of print of posting it now rather than a week from now?
Well, I don't think that it.
Because
I don't think it matters whether it's an early review or not. But if the studio asks you to not run it early, I think you should respect their wishes, because right. that's I think professional courtesy. I don't think they should have control over what you say. And here's the thing, in terms of do critics have an impact on movies, because that's, I think, a bigger thing. Does it impact box office? You look at Transformers and G.I. Joe, released for the same freaking studio, both about toy lines, and both basically the same movie. Lots of shit blowing up with no story or substance. They screened Transformers for everybody, got terrible reviews. The movie's movie's probably by now has made $400 million in the U.S. alone. G.I. Joe, they held from 99% of the critics, and it still did okay, but it didn't do as well. I don't think that good or bad reviews on something like that impact the movie. All it does is create press. Everybody trashing Michael Bay and Transformers 2 created a lot of press, and that's good for the movie ultimately. The only time critics have an impact on the box office, whether their reviews are good or bad, is either if it's a review, if it's a movie that should do well with critics and it doesn't, like All the King's Men, with Jude Law and Sean Penn a couple years ago.
Sucked.
If it's supposed to get a lot of good reviews and it doesn't, that'll kill it. Or if it's a movie that it's like it's supposed to be one way, you think it's going to be one way, and it's being marketed in a certain way, and then the reviews come out and they're like, yeah, it's not that much. You know, it's really not that good. Like a great example for that is the second Narnia movie. Everyone's like, oh, it's a kid's movie. The first Narnia was very cool. Well, the second Narnia movie was much darker, and you had humans getting killed, and it was a heavier movie. Disney held off those reviews, I think, in my opinion, it was because they didn't want people saying this is a dark version of it. You don't want to take your little kids to this movie. And that can impact a movie when those reviews do come out and they're like, it's not what you think. But otherwise, you know, Michael Bay runs around saying he's critic proof. I'm like, well, you know, actually, I think if every critic said that his movies were awesome, I think people would be like, whoa, what's wrong with this movie? Well, I rambled there. I went off and I hit about 7 topics in a row.
No, that's fine. I just want to say that I take a lot of shit from my friends for liking The Island, but that's just me.
Oh, The Island, that's awful.
I know. It's better than at least it's better than Swordfish, but I do. I think that's Michael Bay's best film. I think the first half of that is pretty good sci-fi. The second half is bullshit, but it's still a really cool flick.
Well, but see, that's the point. It's like he started to make this movie that he's like, I'm going to make, you know, the new version of Logan's Run. It's going to be awesome, and it's going to be intellectual, and it's going to make you think. And about two-thirds of the way through, he's like, oh, I just blow shit up.
Yeah,
I'm done thinking.
It seems to me like the two of you have not seen The Rock.
I'm sorry, what was that?
It seems to me that you have not seen The Rock, Marco.
Oh, I have seen. I own The Rock proudly on Blu-ray, and I own my import of The Island from the UK, too. I just, you know, The Rock is number two for me. I took shit on Twitter for that. But, you know, whatever. We all, like I said, we all have our tastes. And, Yeah, if my local critics are listening to this and are laughing their asses off because I love The Island, whatever, I don't give a shit.
Hey, I love Rennie Harlan.
Ford Fairlane is my favorite Rennie Harlan.
Oh no, I gotta say, it's stuff like Cliffhanger and Die Hard 2, and I like Long Kiss Goodnight is freaking awesome.
If you're gonna say Cutthroat Island, then it'd be like, holy fuck, that's worse.
I like Cutthroat Island. The only Rennie Harlan movie I didn't like was The Covenant, and I did not see Driven. But all the other ones, even 12 Rounds, as bad as that movie was, I'm like watching with my wife. I'm like, it wasn't that bad. And yeah, John Cena sucked ass, but I mean, it was fun. All
right, I totally haven't seen that film, but no.
All my credibility out the window.
Don't worry, I'll just link your A-minus review of G-Force and that'll handle the problem.
G-Force was awesome.
I want to get back to something Kevin was talking about with online journalists.
Go ahead,
Marco. I've been noticing, I don't know if you're getting this, but on some of my press invites, I've been noticing that they've been putting at the bottom, you know, like, we strictly enforce embargo, and this includes, like, Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, really?
I get that, you know. That makes sense to me. I'm for it. You know, if they're saying, don't fuck around and go on Twitter and saying, hey, guess what movie I just got out of? It sucked. That's fine. I won't do that. I have in the past, but not when they told me not to. I know that's taking it a step too far, but, you know, in the age we're in now where anybody can say, like, I think once a movie's in the marketplace, it's fair game for anybody. You know, if you buy a ticket, you can do whatever you want.
If you pay for it, game on.
Yeah, seriously, but if the studio's showing it to you early and they say, okay, this is our deal, you get to see it a couple of weeks before, don't write before it comes out, that's fine, I can do that. The other thing I wanted to mention is that I've noticed that a lot of studios have completely different publishers for online journalists, and they handle publicity very differently from print. This is mostly in L.A., but, you know, like, I think Caroline has an online publicist that just directly deals with websites and webmasters as opposed to print journalists.
On the national level, yeah. Yeah, on the national level.
Yeah, so I don't know. I haven't felt that at all because, you know, again, as a freelancer, like, you know, depending on who I'm writing for, it could easily be a website or it could be, you know, a print publication, but webmasters have told me about this, and they say, you know, sometimes the rules are very different for us than they are for print journalists, and I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
You bring up a really nice point, Marco. You talked about how embargoes, and even they're telling you not to go on Twitter and talk about the films. Here's a question I've kind of had, because, as I said, I don't have any press out here. I pay for all my tickets, and I do what the fuck I want. But when you're under embargo over when you're under embargo for some film, like, is it to the point where you don't even talk to it amongst your friends, like, face-to-face about it or anything?
Well, I talk to other critics about it. You know, they're not that strict. It's not like, we're going to fucking kill your family if you tell your best friend you're in, like, Grindhouse.
There's a car bomb in your house after.
No, seriously.
The Joker is out there.
If you met my best friend, then maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. They're not that fucking strict about it. But they are strict to the point where it counts. You know, they obviously don't want you writing a clean reviews. And I've noticed, especially online, you know, like, if somebody, you know, some website puts up an early review of something and they break embargo, then it's almost like it's a free-for-all because they'll point to that site and they'll be like, hey, X wrote the review, so I guess it's cool if we write one too. And then they go, and the next thing you know, like 20 reviews being up before embargo and the studio's trying to pull them all down. That's not a problem, you know, it's not a print problem, for obvious reasons, but at the same time, I don't know. I mean, do you really need to, you know, be the first one to trash Final Destination, or do you?
That's what the internet is all about. Don't you see in all the comments first?
Yeah, but they're mostly bullshit, right?
Well, here's the thing on the embargoes. I have witnessed publicists pull reviews off of sites before. I've been behind the scenes and seen that happen. So it does happen, and I do know of some people who've had the credentials pulled because they've gone and done something. And it's not that you can't, like, call a radio station and win tickets and then go, But at least the way it is in Columbus, and it may be different. You're in, what, San Francisco, Marco?
Yeah.
Are you in San Francisco or LA? Okay. So I don't know how it is out there, but here it's relatively small. So we have two publicity companies that handle all the releases. And so they know you. So you walk up and they're like, hey, Kevin, how are you doing? So if you and they have screenings that are not – the press is explicitly not invited to. And I've gotten special permission occasionally to go into those, whereas like I'm like I don't have time to go see it on Friday. I'm going to see it on Friday anyways. I won't, and I'll call the publicist. I'll be like, hey, I'm not going to run this review until 5 o'clock on day of release, so I could have seen it on my own. Can I come into the so I don't have to pay for it and see it on Thursday night? And they'll say yeah, but if and I have to, they'll be like, you're not supposed to be here, and I'm like, no, I got special permission. So a lot of that's kind of the stranglehold they have on you is you're going to be known at these screenings, and they'll just tell you to not be there. But I mean, they're not going to stop you from talking to your friends. They're going to stop you from being on Facebook. And I'll tell you, my Facebook page, I have publicists that are friends of mine on Facebook. So if I go and I post a review, they'll see it.
Exactly. You know, I have the same thing. I have publicists who like friended me on purpose just to, you know, me and other critics in the area that, you know, they friended us on purpose just to kind of keep tabs on us. And I mean that in a cool way. You know, they're good people and, you know, they're doing their
job.
Well,
that way they get links to your reviews too. But see, that's the thing. You've got to feed your links to your – yeah. So, and you can't tell a critic, no, I'm not going to be your friend. You can't tell a publicist, yeah. I'm not going to friend you on Facebook.
So what you're saying –
sure you can. They'll just yank you from the press list the next day, that's all.
So what you're saying is you're not afraid of online stalking.
I actually have two different my personal friends know this. I have two Facebook pages. I'll just say that out there. So if some people might find me in one and I'll be like, hey, you know, that's like, because I don't want to be sitting there saying I was on vacation on spring break and I on my iPhone were driving through Arkansas, literally driving through Arkansas at like 4 a.m. and I'm like on my Facebook and I'm like driving across Arkansas, listen to Weird Al Yankovic while the rest of the family sleeping in the van, and I put it on and I'm like going, yeah, I'm glad that I don't have people that don't know me personally. They'll be like, oh, that's a great time to rob Kevin's place because he's got to have a wicked awesome DVD collection.
No, I can totally understand that because I definitely think that Facebook, due to its personal nature, makes it really makes you really want to keep that group really small, while Twitter is something that you can... It's something... One thing I heard, I love to listen to Twit, Leo Laporte's show, and one thing I heard them say, which really makes sense to me, is Facebook is for family and friends, so they know what you're up to, while Twitter is for making new friends online.
Oh, yeah. I don't put anything on Twitter that I wouldn't broadcast, you know, on television. You know? Yeah, you don't want to sit there and say, yeah, I mean, the family drove out of town this week. And, you know, when I was on vacation this summer, I didn't put anything on Twitter because I didn't want to tell people I was out of town. Because I'd have G-Man reviews coming in and flying into the States to come rob my house.
I'm sure you have a sweet DVD collection I could add to mine.
Well, that's what happened to it.
That's why you were rearranging so long the other day. You might have noticed a couple of them missing.
Oh, yeah, that's why. But they're all from, like, my... It was this weird mix of, like, porno and kids' films that were gone. I don't know what you were planning.
Anyways, I think we've more or less said as much as we can about film criticism at this point. I'd love to keep talking to you guys, but at the same time, I want to wrap up this recording because my hard drive is about to die. Where can we find all of your guys' stuff on the internet, Marco?
Oh, speaking of privacy, you can find me at a couple of different places. You can find someone at Batwork at firstshowing.net under my name, Marco Cerritos. You can find me at boxoffice.com, part of Box Office Magazine. I have some older reviews on Rotten Tomatoes through my name, again, Marco Cerritos. And Facebook, I'll keep private, but you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/bigdumbmail.
Kevin Carr?
Well, you can find me on the internet. A good portal for me is fatguysatthemovies.com. You can see my big, hairy everything on that site. That'll link also to Film School Rejects, where I do a lot of writing, and 7M Pictures, which is kind of my own little cottage website. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, and you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Carr, and that's it, twitter.com/Kevin Carr. Be prepared to be offended. I might actually live tweet something tonight.
I always wonder about those live tweets. I always look at them and hope and pray they're movies I've seen. You can find all of my stuff at gmanreviews.com and twitter.com/gmanreviews, and my Facebook is something that if you find me, you can add me, and I'll consider it. So this is me saying thank you for listening, and I'm going to leave you with this clip from Almost Famous. Good night, and enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the evening is over. We hope you all enjoyed yourselves, and we'll see you all again in 1974. Good evening!
Blue jean baby, L.A. lady, seamstress for the band, ballerina, you must have seen her. Dancing in the sand. Now she's in me, always with me. Tiny dancer in my hand. Jesus freaks out in the street. Tickets are for gone. Turning back, she just left.